some 800,000 each year. Tobacco is also a leading cause of tuberculosis. Nevin C. Wilson is the director of Southeast Asia Office of International Union Against Tuberculosis and Lung Disease.
If you look at the tobacco-related mortality, India currently is estimated to account for close to a tenth of all the deaths in the world.
40% of TB cases in India comes from chewing and smoking tobacco, and with 250 million tobacco users and 700 million kilos of tobacco being produced in the country, India faces a major challenge in controlling and preventing tuberculosis. While India has a program to control TB, it doesn't include tobacco cessation.
The linkages between tuberculosis and tobacco and the linkages between the program are just being explored. We are not far behind other countries. I don't think in any country in the world right now there this linkage between the tuberculosis control program and the tobacco control program are strongly established. And even WHO has only recently come out with recommendations on how these linkages can be established.
According to a study from the Center for Global Health Research in Canada, TB is about 3 times more prevalent among regular smokers than non-smokers. One effort might help reduce those rates. The International Union Against Tuberculosis and Lung Disease is launching a trial of a 9-month treatment regimen that has demonstrated strong results in a pilot program. But some say government and health officials could do a better job responding to India's TB crisis. Dr. Srinath Reddy is director of the Public Health Foundation of India.
Well, I think we need greater determination on all fronts to ensure that we are able to provide a comprehensive public health response which is effective at all levels of care to prevent TB in the first place, to diagnose TB through accurate laboratory diagnosis at the primary healthcare level, and for effective treatment, and also to prevent multidrug resistant tuberculosis.
According to a World Health Organization report released Tuesday, 440,000 new cases of multidrug resistant tuberculosis emerge each year, but only 7% are actually being detected and even fewer are being treated. The report also says that 1/3 of the estimated new cases are fatal. Manoj Kumar is a TB patient.
I was infected with TB and was cured in due course of time. As I cannot live without tobacco, I've started smoking again. If I get another infection, I'm ready to go for treatment again.
More than 128 years have passed since the microbiologist Robert Koch revealed the bacteria that caused tuberculosis, and today an estimated 2 billion people, roughly 1/3 of the world's population, are chronically infected with tuberculosis. The disease kills about 5,000 people a day, nearly 2 million every year, despite the fact that most cases are completely curable. Jaswinder Sehgal, FSRN, Jaipur, India.
And that wraps up today's program. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Today's headlines editor was Jess Burns. Washington, D.C. editor was Leanne Caldwell. Our technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Rose Katapchi and Scott Pham. You can visit us online at FSRN.org. You can send questions, comments, or news tips to comments at FSRN.org. Thanks for listening. In New York, I'm Dorian Marina.
Как questions about your computer?
Mm-hmm.
Want to know about the latest electronics?
Yeah.
Are you confused by high-definition TV?
A little.
Well, tune into WBAI every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for The Personal Computer Show.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's every Wednesday on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Oh.
So why don't you tell a friend?
Well, okay.
And tell your boss.
Well.
Hey, call your mom and tell them about The Personal Computer Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Oh, okay.
I got questions about my computer.
And you've got questions about your computer?
Knock my coffee over in my keyboard. Do you think that's a problem?
No, not for me.
Well, this doesn't mean working right, Jimmy.
I'd buy a new one, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, really, you've got to be there. It's like the best. It's The Personal Computer Show.
And it's 7 o'clock. You're listening to WBAI New York. Time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, they live on for the best, expect the worst.
The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Mike.
Hi.
Gus.
Oh, hi.
Jim.
Hello.
Dot Rhett.
Hello.
Voltaire.
Hi.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
And down in Philadelphia, Bernie S.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
And here we are again, talking about all kinds of technical issues, previewing the HOPE conference coming up in July. Going over the week's news. I saw an interesting piece in the news this week, which kind of threw me for a loop. Basically, the title of the story, and this was something on CNN, it really made me think for a second. A quarter of the kids in the United Kingdom have tried hacking. Yeah, the newest dangerous drug. A quarter, 25%. of children have tried hacking. What do we do about this? It says the majority of children agree that computer hacking is wrong, but more than a quarter of those in England have tried it. 26% of children surveyed said they had tried hacking, breaking into someone else's account. That's how hacking is defined, according to CNN. At some point, of those who had hacked, more than a quarter, 27%, had targeted accounts on the popular social networking site Facebook, and 18% went after their friends' email accounts, the survey found. The study of 1,000 children in London and 150 from the northern English county of Cumbria was conducted 2 weeks ago by the Cumbria Constabulary and Tuffin Technologies, an international IT security firm. No doubt it's going to profit nicely from this somehow. The findings came despite 78% of respondents agreeing that it is wrong to hack and 53% of them saying they feel it is illegal. The children who said they had hacked were split almost evenly between girls and boys. Of those who admitted guilt, 47% were girls. Most of the hacking, 27%, was done from the children's bedrooms, but 22% was done in internet cafes, 21% was done in the school computer lab, and 19% was done on a friend's machine. The most common reason for hacking was for fun. Oh my God, when did it turn into this? Most common reason for hacking was for fun. 46% of respondents giving that answer. 21% said they intended to cause disruption. And 20% thought they could generate an income from hacking. Well, where do you begin with a story like this? It's incredible.
Gus. The fact that in England there's another word, another meaning for the word hacking, and it usually means riding around on a pony. Are we sure that there's not some sort of confusion about?
I'm pretty sure that's not what they mean here.
They don't mean pony hacking.
Bernie, I'm sure you have a good a good perspective on this.
Well, I was listening to the BBC last night, and they were using the term hacked off, meaning to annoy someone. So
you can say that.
The hacked off is in the British vernacular.
Wait, you really hacked me off just now. I can say that?
Yes,
wow,
you can.
I like this. I like this.
I like it too.
Can we tell someone to go hack themselves?
Probably
No?
You can tell a hack driver
I could get beeped. But I'm not surprised that that person.
I kind of like that. Go hack your own machine or something. Yeah, this is. Go hack your mother's machine, huh?
I think
your mother's
that,
machine is already hacked.
Oh, see this.
Hack your mother's box.
Yeah, this really could do all kinds of interesting things to the language. Go ahead, Bernie. You were saying?
To answer your question, I think that percentage estimate is low. I think probably more kids have tried that and not admitted it. And there's all kinds of hacking. You know, besides the CNN definition of breaking into somebody else's computer, there's all kinds of other hacking. And I bet virtually all kids have tried hacking some sort of system one time or another, whether it's a computer system or a telephone system or some other type of electronic system or some social system or just something.
Yeah, well, it's a healthy thing to do, to try. Yes, to try something out and to experiment. And I think that's, you know, I'm more concerned with people thinking that it's wrong to try these things. And yeah, okay, trying to do something to your friend's Facebook account. You know, it's mischief. It's not a crime. Now, I'm concerned with the people that say they want to make an income doing this, because obviously that's something that doesn't seem very very nice.
Yes, it is wrong. If someone tells you this is only what it's supposed to do and you try to use it in some other way, mm-hmm. you are wrong.
Well, yeah, that's been hammered into my head over and over again. Mike?
It's clear we need to get the kids back on heroin. Then they won't be able to do all this, you know.
Well, I wonder how many people have tried heroin as opposed to trying hacking. It's just amazing to see a headline like this where hacking is seen to be something that's really dangerous
and
evil. It's
strange that they just limited it to like opening up somebody else's account too. Like that's sort of a weak and a weird and a very broad definition.
Well,
that's
the mass media definition of hacking. It's breaking into other computers.
Did they say?
It's not even computers. It's just like a social networking site.
Mm-hmm.
Like.
Do they say how many of these 25% were successful, successfully got into
they
their
They never get into
accounts?
That. They don't get into who actually succeeded in getting through.
No, this is cause for alarm. What's cause for alarm is that the kids aren't hacking at the command line. Like, mm-hmm. that's what we need to be worried about,
yeah.
I think. They don't know anything. Like, when they're hacking this way, they're not really learning anything about how the machines work. What they're learning is just, you know, like, I don't know.
Well,
stuff they could have learned just by bullying on the playground anyway.
That means they're not hacking if they don't know how it works.
And I'm sure
they figure anything
a lot
out.
Of people don't even know what a command line is. And that's something that's really important to mess around with, to experiment with. Okay, so that was a fun little story to see. Then there is this I guess we knew was going to happen at some point. And this comes out of Mississippi. House Bill 872 as sent to the governor, an act to create the Caller ID Anti-Spoofing Act. That's right, to prohibit entering or causing to be entered false information into a telephone caller identification system with the intent to deceive, defraud, or mislead. To prohibit placing a call knowing that false information was entered into the telephone caller identification system. To provide that any violation of this act constitutes an unlawful trade practice under the state consumer protection laws and for related purposes. Bernie, can you translate this for us?
Well, it's a classic example of legislators not understanding this technology they're trying to write laws about. It's got problems written all over. A lot of legitimate people hack spoof caller ID companies, for instance.
Well, let's just to explain to people who might not be familiar with the practice, on your caller ID box, that number that shows up can be manipulated. It can be changed. There are services that allow you to put whatever number you want in there. There are PBXs, private phone systems that allow you to do this. And like you say, some companies do this. Why would they change their number? What's the legitimate purpose for this?
Well, a lot of companies have a lot of phone lines or DID, inward dial numbers, and they want a consistent number to show when they're making calls to their customers or business partners, and they just want to show their main number when they call out. So a lot of them have systems set up, not to spoof, but they just have the program set up to show to whoever they call that they're calling from this one main number, when in fact they'd be calling from some some DID number in the company. So that, you know, there's no, I read the statutory language of this law there, and there's no exception for that. There's the classic exception for law enforcement and intelligence officials. There always is for all criminal laws, that they can spoof caller ID all they want. But and there's serious penalties for this too. What is it? What does the article say? Is something like a year in prison and a fat fine?
Was it a misdemeanor or a felony? I wasn't really sure, to be honest. Reading bills tends to give me a headache. I'll try and what do you have? I'll look into this.
I'm not sure how much of an issue that'll be. Something I heard Manuel just say out loud was the key word, with intent to deceive or defraud. So if a company is spoofing a number to their main line, the caller ID, that may not be considered intent to deceive or defraud.
I found the penalty. Any person who violates this act shall be guilty of a misdemeanor, and upon conviction thereof shall be subject to a fine of not more than $1,000, or shall be imprisoned in the county jail not exceeding 1 year. Or both. Rob.
So the purpose behind this seems to be to stop fraud. But fraud is already illegal, is it not?
Well, it depends who you are, I think.
It depends who you are.
Yeah.
But so you're not allowed to use the system to do something illegal anyway, though. But they're over-regulating it.
Well, this will probably only be prosecuted against people who are committing fraud or people who the government otherwise decides it doesn't like. But there is this additional category of deception, and not all deception is fraud. If I just want to trick you into something, and I spoof caller ID to do so, that may not be fraud, but it could be illegal if the statute.
But Mike, when
passes.
I make phone calls sometimes on the air here, oftentimes I say I'm somebody I'm not, or I don't say who I really am. Wouldn't that be the same thing?
Right. So that is not necessarily illegal, but if this bill passes and you spoof caller ID while doing so, then it will be illegal.
But I can spoof my own voice. I can lie. I can say I'm somebody I'm not. And okay. I'm wondering how much.
If you piss off the wrong person, they'll probably find something to get you
Hack
for.
Hack off the wrong person. Okay.
Off the wrong person.
Yes, Gus.
Well, yeah, the other case, of course, is the usual. If an abused woman decides to spoof or block her ID in order to, you know, deceive a former partner who's abusive, does that end up being, you know, it's deceptive, but it's deception in the sense self-preservation.
But at the same time,
hang on, you haven't introduced yourself yet. Late again.
My work schedule seems orthogonal to my.
Okay, why don't you just not set your clock ahead or something?
Yeah.
Just go to a different time zone, then you'll be here on time. Red Hacked, welcome.
I'd be an hour early. There are other ways for people who, you know, I mean, if someone is an abuse victim, they can go to the authorities. They don't have to. I mean, I don't understand what the case is where they would need to spoof caller
ID.
You
just block your phone number.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't always work.
Use a payphone.
I've demonstrated that many times to people. They think they're blocking their number, and they're not.
But most normal people wouldn't have the ability to undo the block.
Well, normal people aren't the problem, are they?
And normal people wouldn't be able to spoof a number either.
Rob.
But there are also ways to make strange things come up on the caller ID that aren't necessarily you trying to do it. I use Skype a lot to call regular phone numbers, and that usually comes up on a caller ID as something weird, like 12345 or something. And so now am I inadvertently breaking this law every time I make a call with that?
Or Skype.
Probably. All right. Interesting story there. Here's another really interesting story. This was on the front page of CNN. It was the main story. Main story being Walmart appalled at racist order over loudspeaker. Now, I mean, just that headline alone, that's the most important story in the country, nay, the world, according to CNN, that somebody made a racist remark over a loudspeaker in a store. Here's what happened. New Jersey authorities, yes, right next door, are investigating an announcement, and I believe they already found the culprit, but this is when the story came out. They're investigating an announcement made over a public address system at a southern New Jersey Walmart telling all blacks to leave the store. Shortly before 5 p.m. Sunday, an unidentified male accessed the public address system at the Turnersville, New Jersey Walmart Supercenter store. And basically, they said the incident is being investigated by both law enforcement agencies as a suspected bias intimidation crime. Walmart corporate spokesman Lorenzo Lopez said the company is just as appalled by this as anyone. He emphasized that Walmart, the world's largest public corporation, is working with law enforcement officials and investigating the incident. Whoever did this is wrong, acted in an inappropriate manner, understatement of the year. Clearly, this is unacceptable. What I find amazing here is that all this attention is being drawn towards Walmart, when obviously it's just some joker accessing their public address system, and it's got nothing to do with Walmart employment policies or how big they are or anything like that. It's just weird to see how the story evolves.
Yeah, well, they ended up catching the person. They used the security camera footage in the store.
Uh-huh. Probably wasn't so hard.
It was some 16-year-old and his friends.
Yeah, you can do the same thing at Home Depot. You can pick up the phone and dial two digits, and you can be addressed. In fact, I've used that to get help because oftentimes you don't get any help unless you have to hunt somebody down. Or you called them on the phone.
That was exactly what it was. They just picked up one of those phone things in the store and were able to speak over the whole store.
You know? There's another potential aspect to all of this. And I believe, Bernie, you know something about this. There are some stores where you can actually access this kind of system from outside.
Yeah, and this is nothing new. This is I remember from like the early 90s, this was a problem where Kmart's, for instance, were subjected to this kind of a prank by a lot of phone prankers, and think that it's been mentioned in 2600 Magazine.
It's interesting you should say this, Bernie, because I happen to have right here an excerpt from 1997. Do you remember the Beyond Hope Conference?
I do.
Yeah, well, this is from the social engineering panel at the Beyond Hope Conference. We have actually this in two pieces. In 1997, we had somebody on stage known as NetWeasel, and what he is attempting to do here is call a local Kmart here in New York City and get the digits that need to be dialed in the first place. I think he already knew what the digits were because he had done this before, but to get what digits you have to dial in order to access the public address system from anywhere, really, and obviously all you have to do is get transferred to that. Let's hear how he got the information first.
Thank you for calling Open Plaza Kmart. I'm at Breakfast Call.
Yeah, can I get the clothes section?
For men or women?
Men.
Hold on, sir.
Always try to hack a system while you're on hold. So here he is on hold with all kinds of amazing music being played. And keep in mind, we're in an auditorium with like 1,000 people listening to this and trying to keep quiet and not laugh too hard. Yeah. I don't think hold music is this good anymore.
Try for your call, sir.
Hello?
Menswear?
Yo, this is Mark over in Auto. Can I get a salon?
Excuse me?
This is Mark, over the front desk. I got an outside line. Can I speak to the manager?
Yeah, hold on a second.
Hey, Ken!
Hello, this is Ken. Can I help you?
Hi, this is Mark from the Broadway store.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing? We're having trouble accessing our intercom. Are you guys having the same problem?
No.
As
in the PA system?
The PA system, yeah. We usually use 50.
50?
Yeah, we just transfer. It's just an extension over at our store.
I never heard of that number before in terms of PA systems.
So. Do you know the number to call for service?
No, not really, because, I never had a problem with the PA system before. I'm my use with the company, so...
Oh.
I couldn't really help you.
What extension do you guys use?
To the PA system?
Yeah.
Feature 631.
Feature 631?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
And that is how you do it. That's how you get the information. And it was met with much celebration.
I am not a criminal.
Not yet, but... Bernie, do you remember this?
I remember that well, and this was a very popular trick, as I remember. People could actually call in to a Kmart and supposedly other stores, too, that use similar systems, and ask to be transferred to that extension. And then they could announce whatever they wanted over the PA system from the privacy of their own home or wherever they happen to be. And that caused, as you can imagine, all kinds of problems.
It caused a bit of turmoil. But as you can see, what NetWeasel was doing in this first instance here was getting the information. I believe, like I said, he already had the information. But by calling up and winning the confidence of somebody in a company, getting them to tell you something because you're having a problem, they want to help you out. Now you can go into a situation with more confidence and know that this is how it works. So in the second excerpt, he approaches the situation from a totally different angle. Let's listen.
Okay.
Good evening, yes, the police, Kmart, Colleen speaking. Can I help you?
Hi, can I speak to someone in shoes?
Hold on.
Thank you.
Hello, Schumer, are you speaking?
Hi, this is John from the Pennsylvania Plaza store.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, do you guys have a lot of sandals? Because we didn't get our shipment in.
Sandals?
Sandals. Like the beach sandals.
Actually,
can you transfer me to 631?
631?
Yeah.
All right, hold on.
Attention, Kmart shoppers. Everything in aisle 4 is free!
Oh, boy. Yeah.
I suggest getting out of town now.
Damn it, Rebel, why'd you do that?
All right, next question. Try to keep us out of trouble.
770 Broadway.
770 Broadway. I'll go see what happens.
He's on his way over to the store now.
Yeah, in fact, we did send somebody over to the store, and in fact, there was a bit of turmoil over there because that announcement didn't make it out. Wow. I imagine the statute of limitations has expired for that 1997. That was from the Beyond Hope Conference. This gives you an example of the kind of fun we have sometimes. But also, not to make an offensive act by some idiot that did this, or actually did this without any cleverness at all, simply by picking up a phone in the Walmart down in New Jersey. There are always ways of figuring out methods to get around the system and doing something a little bit more imaginative, I think, right?
I'm also a little bit unclear. He's being threatened with a year in juvenile detention. And
the guy in New Jersey made the racist remark. Yeah.
And I didn't know. I mean, obviously, there's lots of reasons not to make racist remarks, but I didn't know it was illegal.
Well, I mean, I think it's an overreaction as far as just this can be solved by simply convincing the person that he acted like a real idiot and is embarrassed. And let's move on, you know, and maybe protect the system a little bit better would be nice.
They'll never do that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, after all this time, it's still pretty easy. Gus?
Actually, this reminds me of the I think they've got a new game show, is it in France, where they're basically recreating Stanley Milgram's experiments.
Oh, yeah, I heard about this.
And so it's just sort of like, I mean, what I keep thinking is, if I heard something like that over the PA, I'd be like, okay, somebody hacked into the PA. You know, it's how much do we believe and why?
Yeah, well, the real disturbing thing is that's what people gravitate towards, is something offensive and racist, and that's what we have to focus on, is why people do that. But tell us more about that experiment, because this is fascinating, what's happening in France right now, the original experiment.
Yeah, the original Stanley Milgram experiment, and Milgram is sort of cited as the guy who's the reason why academics now have to do all kinds of review before they do their research, just so they're not doing anything bad to people that scars them for life. So Stanley Milgram was the guy who put an actor in one room and put his subjects in the other room with a pane of one-way glass so that the subjects could see the guy and the actor in the other room. And they presented him with a row of buttons that I think basically did nothing. And he said, you know, press this button, you'll give the guy a range of electric shocks. You'll have one button over here that's for low electric shock and one that is, like, you know, going to cause him serious pain. And so the actor reacted when they pressed the button as if he had been shocked. And Milgram's point was basically that you could just sort of ratchet up and people will do what they're told by a guy in a white lab coat.
And also people sort of developed this authoritarian complex about them, that they had control over this person. I guess sort of like a cop-like mentality. Voltaire.
I think you can see that actually with the Princeton experiment, which is something different. But
right, yes.
I think the main point of the Milgram experiment experiment was that they had at the end of the lever of like level of electricity that you shock them with, there's a point where it said lethal, do not push up to this level, and the people would say, oh well, as long as the people in white lab coats say it's okay, then I'll do it anyway, and like 99% of them did it.
Just following orders.
Yeah.
Well, but I don't think the percentage was that high. But
yeah,
it was 100% in the French one from what I heard.
I don't think they could see the actor, though. I think they just could hear them.
Actually,
I think they were asking them questions, and if they answered it wrong, they would shock them.
In the French one, that just
you're
happened.
You're confusing it with a Ghostbusters movie, was the asking questions thing, yeah.
But I believe everybody was visible in the French TV show.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not really sure about the details of the French TV show, but basically the deal is that now in France, they've basically turned the same experiment into a TV show, and everybody's sort of reeling from that a little bit.
Uh-huh.
They're trying to up the English for Big Brother. But actually, with the original experiment, Milgram tried it in many different ways. Or some samples he let the person see the person. Some examples they didn't see the person. Mm-hmm. Some example they actually had to touch the person. Like they actually had to, I forget what, or actually put the person's hand onto the thing that would shock them. And what he was able to find was that if you had to have physical contact and put the person's hand onto the thing that's going to shock them, then the chance of you pushing the level up to lethal would go down to like 9%. And so in human rights studies, one of the main ways that people use to promote human rights is to humanize the people behind the conflict. Mm-hmm. And that all comes out of the Milgram experiment.
Mm-hmm. So if a cop just touches you, he's not going to brutalize you nearly as much. Is that what
it
we're getting at?
What
this?
He touches you with?
Yeah, because that hasn't been my experience.
Yeah.
All right, Red Hack, do you have something else? Okay, Bernie, what do you think about all this?
Well, I think it just demonstrates the principle that if you give people unlimited control over another person's life, scary things can happen. And you see that a lot with law enforcement and intelligence officials and other people that have pretty much unfettered authority with not much oversight, that things will typically get out of control. And it's not limited to cops. It's anybody. You give them authority, they are apt to abuse it. Not necessarily will, but power corrupts.
And this is – I still end up thinking about the recipient side too. I mean – there's a mediated voice over a Walmart loudspeaker. Do you do what it says? If you are not the target of it, do you help move the target people of it out of the store? I mean, like, I think there's also, while we need to make sure that people don't have power where they can abuse it, we all need to also ask ourselves, why are we doing this?
Yeah, it all comes down to the fact that in an authoritarian society, people will obey any voice of authority that's thrown at them. Mm-hmm. And
they want to. People want that authority in their lives, whether it's parental or through schools or through employment or through the military. It's scary. So, all right. Shall we talk about Google and what's going on in China?
Yes.
Okay. Who wants to start this? So what they're doing now, I haven't actually checked myself. I don't know what happens if you try to go to google.cn from here. But I know if you do it from there, you get rerouted to google.hk, which is Hong Kong Google. And apparently the Chinese authorities filter that as well. So what's the significance here? Does it mean that everybody in China now is able to get unfettered access to the Internet? Or
the same thing happens if you visit google.cn from the United States. You get redirected to the Hong Kong site, and I think there's .co.hk or some other letters in there. But
I think it's .com.hk.
Well, I'm going to try it right now.
It's very exciting. You'll see Google in Chinese with some like wacky animated characters that we don't get in the U.S. version.
Uh-huh.
It's very advanced.
What's the significance of them doing this? I mean, basically, they're routing from you know, one part of the region to another, and can't the same
censorship.
The advantage is that the Chinese government does not exert the same sort of censorship on Hong Kong, so that the servers in Hong Kong do not have to censor themselves in the way that servers in mainland China do. But the tricky bit is that the Chinese government is apparently able to filter the connection between Hong Kong and mainland China, so the effect to the end users is a little bit questionable.
Right.
I just connected to google.cn, and yes, it does go to google.com.hk.
But have the Chinese reacted at all? Have they filtered?
Well, they said they're very disappointed with Google, and they did exactly the wrong thing. I think that's what their quote was.
But they haven't done anything. Because, I mean, they could very easily block this.
They could, I suppose.
I don't know.
I heard something on CNN.
I heard they're filtering. CNN, you know what they are capable of as far as defining things.
Yeah.
I think this gives them the opportunity to actually block, but it's going to make them look really bad. Voltaire.
I think what they have done is actually blocked out the entire Google search engine like through China, but they have left a few Google services that they're able to use, but still filtered, I guess.
There's actually an entry on Google's blog describing this change and also linking to a page that Google put up, which shows which of Google services are and aren't available in mainland China in the form of a checklist and in the form of dates, so you can see what's changed from day to day.
Well, this is what they say on that blog. They say, figuring out how to make good on our promise to stop censoring search on google.cn has been hard. We want as many people in the world as possible to have access to our services, including users in mainland China. Yet the Chinese government has been crystal clear throughout our discussions that self-censorship is a non-negotiable legal requirement. We believe this new approach of providing uncensored search in simplified Chinese from google.com.hk is a sensible solution to the challenges we faced. It's entirely legal and will meaningfully increase access to information for people in China. We very much hope that the Chinese government respects our decision, though we are well aware that it could at any time block access to our services. We will therefore be carefully monitoring access issues and have created a special web page where we'll be updating regularly every single day so that everyone can see which Google services are available in China. It just seems to me, you know, didn't we know all this before that Google.cn was blocking all kinds of things? Why is this an issue now? Why did Google seem to be the last people to realize that it's a very restrictive society and this kind of thing does need to be challenged?
I think Google did know about it, and I think the ultimate they knew how this would all pan out, and I think they were looking forward to correcting their mistake, but doing it in such a way as that so that they look like a superhero. Basically, they look to their customer base, which is us here and the rest of us in the West, that you know, oh, they're doing the right thing, they're going up against the big bad Chinese government, but all they're doing is correcting a mistake they shouldn't have made in the first place, perhaps.
I think I disagree, because when they first went in, they got a lot of flack just for going in and having a censored service and like basically placating the Chinese authorities. And I think now they're finally they haven't actually apologized for going in the first place. I think that's something they definitely should do, but I think it's much better than having the censored service as they were doing before.
Okay, I'm looking at that updated website right now, and they have basically sort of like a checklist for 3 days that they've been doing this, the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd of March. And they have either a check or an X, depending on if something is allowed or not allowed. Web search, images, news, ads, Gmail, and mobile all get checks. YouTube gets an X. Sites, I'm not really sure what sites mean, but that's blocked as well. As is Blogger. And partially blocked are Picasa and Groups, and also Docs. So that's the update.
I think they might have shot themselves in the foot a little bit with this, at least with doing business with companies over there, because now their content is politicized, and any deals they have going on with any other companies in China, you know, like if you're talking about some patriotic people, they're going to not want to do business with them. And now they might lose access to a very large country, which if they didn't do this in the first place, they might not have had this problem.
Naive question. How about like the Google search appliance on other people's web pages? Does that still, I'm imagining that's not accessible.
It would have to go through to Google.
To Google, yeah. So there's the, yeah, okay.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's where it stands. It's kind of, Mike.
On the off chance that we have any listeners in China, there are ways that people in China can get around this sort of filtering. Tor is a really good one. You can look that up. But
T-O-R.
Yeah, but the issue is that this affects mostly people who don't have the technical skills to avoid the blocking.
I was surprised I couldn't use AIM when I was in China, that was blocked. I was able to get around it with a web client, but it still, that surprised me. I was able to get through to CNN no problem and various other things, but not AIM.
It might also depend on if they're filtering ports, certain, you know, if they're filtering certain ports or services, or only allow certain ones. So they may only allow web browsing, but not, you know, the Oscar protocol port. So.
Okay, Bernie, any thoughts on this?
About 3 years ago, when Google just started to do business in China and provide search services, they agreed in writing with the Chinese government, and the Chinese government is announcing this all over the place. That Google agreed to censor its searches in writing, and they have violated their agreement. So, you know, Google had a choice about this 3 years ago, and they went into it, I think, rather naively. And it wasn't until, a few weeks ago, when Google servers in China got hacked and then allegedly lost some serious source code to whoever hacked them in China, and again, that's supposedly the Chinese government that hacked those servers, then Google got all upset about it and decided to do something about it. The biggest loss to Google apparently now, in all the business articles I'm reading, is the cell phone sales. Cell phone and mobile services that Google is providing. Right now, the Chinese government is now telling all the cell phone companies in China to not sell any Google phones anymore. So any of the Android phones, forget it. You can't buy them in China now.
It seemed to me that Google's reaction to that quote-unquote hack attack that occurred allegedly from within China was a bit overblown. I mean, don't services get hacked all the time, invaded all the time? It just seemed like they politicized that a lot and made it an assumption that it had to be coming from within the Chinese government or some kind of a policy decision. And it just seems to me like that was something that I don't know. Maybe they were planning this out to from the very beginning. They knew this was going to go down this road. Voltaire.
I think the reason why they got so upset about the quote unquote hacking of the Google like properties in China or from Chinese IP addresses was because of it wasn't just that they were hacking Google sites. It was that they were trying to hack the individual email that were hosted by Google. But it was the email belonging to human rights activists and such in China. And that kind of, I guess, got them to wake up and realize how unethical their whole situation was in China. And, I mean, it obviously came 3 years too late, but it's still better than nothing.
Okay, we're going to take phone calls, 212-209-2900. We do have a couple other stories to focus on, including the sexting story. The first federal appeals court opinion dealing with sexting, the transmission of sexually explicit photographs by cell phone. A three-judge panel, the United States Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, ruled, was that today? That was last week, last Wednesday, that parents could... could block the prosecution of their children on child pornography charges for appearing in photographs found on some classmates' cell phones. Bernie said that was in Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's where the Third Circuit is, federal court is based here in Philly. The legal opinion there was that just because some minor students' pictures appeared on other people's cell phones and were being swapped like baseball cards, doesn't mean that that particular minor themselves was responsible for violating the child pornography law. I mean, you know, just because someone has a picture taken of them and maybe not without their permission, that doesn't mean that person should be disciplined. So that was what this law was about. Parents were like, well, you know, prove that my child could violated the law here. So that's what the law was about, or this decision was about.
Sorry, I can't hear Bernie, so I don't know what to talk. I was actually going to say a similar story to this that I read about today. In Florida, they're trying to pass a new law to make sexting illegal, which would block prosecution under child pornography laws, but would have other penalties associated with, I think, fines and things like that.
Is that text sexting or specifically image sexting?
This
is an unspecific term, sexting.
I think it generally applies to images, though, at least in the context of people getting prosecuted.
According to this, sexting is defined as explicit photographs, but I could see where sexting could be text as well, based on the word, but I don't know how many people actually would do that. But what's interesting about this is that the parents are the ones who can block the prosecution of their children. I can't imagine what parent wouldn't want to block the prosecution of their own children. But
yeah, I mean, basically, like, you're protecting your child from not only going through the trauma of, like, being subject to a legal case, but also, you know, having the stigma of having, you know, possible child pornography charges against you, which could really screw up your life. I mean, like, these days, seeing as they have, like, you know, they tell you where you can live, where you can't live, things like that, as somebody who's considered a predator against children.
Yeah, a lot of this also just doesn't make sense. I mean, you have, like, these laws against child pornography because you don't want children being used and whatnot. But when these photos are on another minor's phone, how exactly is this minor somehow being abused by somebody else?
Because the other minor is going to grow up someday. And they're going to save that picture, and then that'll
future
be...
Future crime.
Yeah, exactly.
Future
have
crime.
To protect the children, even if we have to prosecute them in order to do so.
I think even by coming up with bizarre explanations, you're giving them more credit than they deserve. I think there is actually no explanation for these prosecutions.
Really? How Kafka-esque?
It seems like this is just a legal technicality that just that started popping up once people start gain the ability to send photos over their phones.
Roll there.
It's just basically overly panicked parents that are worrying about their kids being sexual, doing normal activities that on technology they don't understand.
That sounds like a theme that we keep coming back to.
Yes.
Rob.
I am just so grateful my child predates this whole phenomenon because I did some damn stupid things as a kid.
Your childhood, you mean?
Yes, my childhood.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, and again, our phone number 212-209-2900. One more story, and then we're going to take some phone calls. And this could be rather interesting. A bill introduced in the U.S. Senate yesterday could compel the White House, or would compel the White House, to identify international cybercrime havens and establish plans for cleaning them up. The International Cybercrime Reporting and Cooperation Act. Did that spell something? ICRA. It takes on a growing problem for banks and U.S. businesses, the ability for cyber criminals to operate with impunity across international borders. The bill is co-sponsored by Senators Kirsten Gillibrand. She's one of ours from New York, and Orrin Hatch, a Republican from Utah. Now, in recent years, cyber criminals have mastered techniques for hacking into consumer and small business bank accounts and moving money overseas. They've also become adept at converting hacked personal computers into botnet computer networks, which then can be used for spam, distributed denial service attacks, and ID theft. The bill would shine a spotlight on countries that are thought to be soft on cybercrime and introduce new protocols for addressing the problem. Under the proposed legislation, the president would provide an annual assessment on international cybercrime and would be able to suspend aid, financing, or trade programs with countries that fail to improve. Now, Bernie, I know you were very concerned about this, and I don't see any of your concerns reflected in the opening paragraphs anyway, but tell us what those concerns would be.
Well, it seems pretty vague and maybe overbroad that, you know, there are hacker spaces all over the world, some of which I've visited, and are really remarkable creative places where people do some amazing work, none of it fraudulent. And I fear that some of these hacker spaces are going to be end up on this list and being used for political purposes. This is the highest levels of our government now demonizing countries that provide a safe haven for hackers, and I just see this going down a bad road.
You know, but this doesn't sound like they're talking about hacker spaces. They're talking about havens, as in like tax havens, and you know, for instance, things that go on in cyber criminals that work out of Russia and do stuff in the U.S. or China. It sounds like this is more of dealing with the international arrangements that these countries have.
But Bernie, you think it could be applied towards hackerspaces?
Absolutely. The law does not provide any exception for hackerspaces where people just gather and have fun and develop cool things. I think this is a dangerous road at the highest levels of our government to provide political pressure to countries to provide a safe haven to hackers, whether or not those hackers are actually committing fraud. This proposal doesn't require that be the case.
I think, Bernie, that this is probably just going to end up being just another way for the U.S. government to make lists of countries it doesn't like. Like, they have this same list for countries that are supposed to be drug havens, but basically the way to get off the list is to make the U.S. government like you in some way that has nothing to do with drug policy. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if this just becomes like another list of countries that the president likes, you know?
All right. Very quickly, Gus, and then we'll take
I was
phone
just
calls.
Worried this would become a way to hate on Iceland because of their support of WikiLeaks.
If you opened up that door, we haven't really talked about this. This is something actually that's been going on for a while, and it was discussed at length at the CCC Congress in December in Germany about Iceland becoming a haven for journalistic freedom and all kinds of democratic ideals. Does anybody want to dive into what this is all about for our listeners?
What the Icelandic People know that the government in Iceland basically has fallen apart. The economy in Iceland has fallen apart. So there's all these new people in the Icelandic parliament.
Somehow when governments fall apart in some parts of the world, it gets better for people.
Yeah, well,
I'd like to try that. I'd like to try that here sometime.
So there's all these people in parliament who are like, what should we do? We've got nothing else to do. We're in parliament now. And what they did is, with the help of WikiLeaks and some other organizations, they took basically the best media regulations from around the world, so shield laws, protection of sources, those sorts of laws. They took them all and they made one big law called the IMMI, and the website is immi.is. And this bill, I don't know if it's fully passed yet, but it appears to have wide support in the current parliament. So basically, if you publish something in Iceland, it will be really hard to take it down.
All right, we're definitely going to be talking about this more in the weeks ahead. We know some of the people involved in this whole process. It's going to be fascinating developments.
And one bit of sort of news that's yet unclear, WikiLeaks is apparently being followed around by some people from the U.S. State Department. They're posting this on their Twitter.
What do you mean followed around? It's a website.
I mean followed around. Like they're real humans behind the website, and you can follow them around if you want.
I'm not. Is this a game or
no? They feel that they're being surveilled by the U.S. government.
All right, well that's always fun.
So
okay,
worth watching.
We'll keep an eye on that situation as well. 212-209-2900. Let's hear what our listeners have to say. And
Sean,
good evening. Wait until we start talking before you start talking. Go ahead.
Sean,
good evening.
You have the same reaction.
No, you see, you start talking before I start talking. I'm going to have to cut you off because I have no choice. It's really kind of easy to figure out. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, Emmanuel. It's Renderman.
See, you did it right. You did it the proper way. Yes. You're Canadian, so you know something about protocol.
Yes.
What's on your mind?
I just had a couple of comments on some of the things you're talking about. First, with the data havens, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the United States the biggest source for spam right now?
Well, I don't know if you're giving us too much credit, but we certainly try.
Yeah,
well, we might be exceeded by some places.
But since the U.S. will never be put on a list of countries that the U.S. doesn't like, I think
precisely.
We're safe.
Self-hating nation!
Yeah. Yes, and anything else?
The other one was the whole sexting thing. I think the whole source of that problem is that people have this knee-jerk reaction that, child pornography must do something bad, but the laws haven't caught up with modern technology, in that you can actually have a minor be both simultaneously perpetrator and victim in a crime. So if they take a picture of themselves, they're both the victim and the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this weird, well, we need to prosecute and do something bad to the perpetrator, but at the same time they're the victim, so the law is just kind of...
Well, we also have to send a message, more importantly. It's all about sending messages. Communication. Red Hack.
At the same time, don't you think that they've kind of gotten the message? I mean, they've been... You know,
what's the message? I don't know what the message is supposed to be.
If they find, if they're being prosecuted, it's probably because this image has been disseminated. They're probably already embarrassed about it and realize that they were an idiot. So why do we have to also then, label them a sex offender? It doesn't make
dragging
any sense.
Dragging them to the court suddenly makes it better by, you know.
You know, I maintain that it's private communications between people. You can transmit whatever you want, pictures or drawings or words. Who are these other people that are discovering this and prosecuting people? They're the ones invading
privacy.
Your
minor's going to have sex. You just can't take pictures.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Renderman. Hope to see you soon.
Have a good one.
Take care. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi, how's it going, guys?
Hi, what's up?
I actually made a pledge to your show, and I'm not much of a computer expert myself, but I just find it fascinating what you guys talk about on a week-to-week basis.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, you're exactly the kind of demographic we're after, people that aren't techies themselves, but find what we talk about to be interesting and hopefully learn and contribute something.
And I actually made a pledge through my company, which is a nascent company called earthdriver.org. I would love if you guys checked it out for 2 seconds. It's an independent record label. We have some really good music. And my question to you, I guess, technically is, I'm so ignorant that I was just introduced to the concept of SEO, search engine optimization. Could you make any recommendations as far as, is there such thing as poor man's SEO? Like, what could I go...
All right, well, Gus is making the most severe facial reaction to this, so go ahead, you start and...
SEO is full of lies. Right. It's made of lies. It's I just feel there's... better ways to promote your website, honestly, because SEOs...
Tell the people who have no idea what that
search
means.
Search engine optimization basically means making your search sites or your site's web rankings or their rankings in search engine findings go up, and frequently involves putting stuff on your page that has nothing to do with your site at all.
Uh-huh. Okay. So. Walter?
Yeah, so basically search engine optimization boils down to putting an invisible text on your website, stuff like sex and links to like porn websites that and people won't see, but Google will be able to see. And it's a really bad idea. Anybody that tried to sell you on SEO is basically just a snake oil salesman. Don't do it. And, yeah, just stay away from it.
Companies trying to get more traffic would probably be better to use things like Google's ads, where they actually are getting the audience that actually might care about their product and seeing the ad, and then, you know.
Yeah, that's basically what I was going to say, as well as, the great way to have a successful website is to be a good provider of what it is you do.
Yeah, exactly. The way to get highly ranked is to actually have a good product. And, you know, that's what's going to bubble to the top, and all this stuff is just trying to trick the system. Mm-hmm. But really what's going to always land on top.
I can't disagree with any of this.
And we're all being a little bit too harsh. There is white hat SEO, where people are trying to do it well. But, I mean, so this is what this consists of, is just writing a better website. Make sure that you have all the keywords that are relevant to what you do. You just want to make sure, you know, especially if you have things that are in images, things that are in video, mm-hmm. make sure those are all written out for all the people who appear in your video and things like that, because that is more likely, you know, that you're just going to get more people finding the things that you actually provide in that way. So that's something you want to start looking into.
Okay. Thanks for that, caller. Let's move on to the next question. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes. What I would like to see at the Hope Conference.
It's Rebel. Rebel, did you hear you were referenced in that tape from 1997? Even then, we were blaming you for everything.
I'm not listening to the show now, but I just...
Oh, no. How can you... How do you even know it's on, then?
Well, I just take it because I know, you know, to tune in on... Well, not tune in, but I know that Tuesday nights...
Rebel, this is the most distorted type of phone you've ever used. What are you, on Space?
I'm in Sprint PC.
Oh, okay. Enough said, then.
what I'd like to see at the whole conference this year is a TSPS, or TOPS Operator Console.
Or maybe a TOPS operator will show up because there's no use for them anymore.
No, they showed up at the Hoka. I've seen them at the Hoka conference.
Okay. Well, you know, you really got to change providers or change phones or something like that. But, yeah, it's a good idea. Some retro phone equipment or retro computing, things like that. Write to us, projects@hope.net or volunteers@hope.net if you want to get involved in the Hope conference at all. If you want to submit a talk, we're still accepting talks, speakers@hope.net. All kinds of ways of getting involved, but always good to hear Rebel's voice again.
Are we ever going to have a Best of Rebel special? Because this running gag really goes back.
You're hired. You can listen to all the hundreds of hours of tapes and figure out which one of those is the one worthwhile. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Yes, speak up.
Long live the People's Republic of China, you...
Unbelievable. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
People's Republic of China.
Yeah, we don't need to hear it twice. Good evening. Hello?
Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Turn down your radio, please.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air. Turn down your radio.
Oh, okay. I was just calling. I have a quick question. I left the Verizon Ozone because it was recommended to me by the person who actually designed it.
Verizon Ozone? Is that really what they call it?
Well, it's called the Ozone, and it has a talk feature.
All right.
And I was sitting on the bus, actually, last week, and the person who designed the phone, you know, he was watching me use my phone, and he was saying, oh, use this phone. I designed it, so I wouldn't ask about it the same day. And I told this person, specifically the salesman, I don't want the Internet service because I already have Wi-Fi, or I'd rather just pick up Wi-Fi, and I ask him, can I get Wi-Fi with this phone? So... Long story short, I have the phone, but I have the Internet service because after I purchased the phone, then he tells me, well, I have to have the mandatory Internet service plan.
Did you purchase a phone from somebody on a bus?
No.
Oh, okay.
I went into the Verizon store.
All right. I was a little worried there. So
the person who designed the Ozone was on the bus. I was talking to him, and he recommended the phone.
Okay.
So my question is, usually I can get around it. I have an old phone that I had hacked, and I was able to get Internet using my Bluetooth connection. So do you guys know any way around me having to use the internet service, or just should I just send back the phone? Because it just arrived. I didn't open it, so I was just going to send it back.
Yeah, return the phone, because a lot of phones require you to have purchase an internet plan, and it sounds like this is one of them, and you just could be wasting $20 a month or something.
You basically are going to end up signing, you know, a contract. I'm assuming you got the phone at a discount. So what they're doing
I only do month to month.
Oh.
So I had to pay just about full price for the phone.
Well, if you already bought the phone.
Well, if you bought the phone, then it's up to, I mean, then it's up, you should be able to call them and say, I don't want you to turn on the internet service. I don't know anything about the phone. I can't tell you. Maybe it has, I mean, it might have Wi-Fi built in. I would search, you know, the phone's name on the internet and search for, like, Wi-Fi. But if you don't have a contract with them that specifies that you need to use their internet, then they don't. I don't know if they have to provide it.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for that call. Good luck with that. Ozone? Really? Do you think it has a big hole in the middle of their coverage area? I don't know. That's not a name I would choose. All right. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Oh, sorry.
You understand that, you imperialist?
Do you have how many phones? The sad thing was I didn't turn him up right away, so we didn't get the beginning of his clever remarks. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah. Hi there. Hi, Emmanuel. My name's Brian from Baltimore. I just wanted to call everybody's attention to the fact that it's Ada Lovelace Day. Ada Lovelace is a...
Wow.
Yeah, she's a woman who helped out Charles Babbage with the difference engine. And so today's a day to celebrate all the women that that are in technology.
Awesome. So, well, you know, I think we mentioned this last year, too, and that's really good that someone called to remind us of this.
And if you want to celebrate, learn the Ada programming language. It's awesome.
Yeah.
She's also regarded as the first computer programmer, I think, in the world, because she designed basically a program to work on one of his engines. I don't remember which one.
All right. 212-209-29. Actually, I'm not going to give the phone number out anymore because we only have time for one more call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, how you doing? I had a quick question for you. You know, what's the quickest way of turning off an automated telemarketing thing when you've obviously made it clear to the company that you don't want it anymore, and they're like, oh, okay, we will, and you still get the call.
Are you on the do not call list?
Yeah, I'm on the do not call list. I'm on the do not mail list.
Okay, well, first thing you want to do is file a report, file a complaint.
Well, the only thing that I know that they're getting around is because I used to be a customer of them. It's Terminix, basically.
Uh-huh.
But I'm telling you, on a weekly basis, and it has to be at 6 p.m., you know, every night, they call and say, you know, an automated voice says, you know, we have this wonderful plan for you. And I'm like saying, excuse me, but
you need to put the fear of the Lord into them and say, you know, the next person that calls is going to be responsible for a multi-million dollar lawsuit. And, that, you know, somebody's going to write that down somewhere and say that, you know, that this person means business. Let's not call him again, Gus.
You're saying it's an automated call, though, and that's a problem. I get that a lot, too.
Well, okay, if an automated call, eventually you can talk to a human if you're interested in buying something. So just express interest, get to a human, and I think that's the only way you're going to stop this.
Right. Once you get one of their representatives on the line, tell them to be taken off the list. And, you know, you can be nasty about it, especially if it's bothersome, and tell them, look, if you don't stop calling me, I'm never going to be your customer again, this, that, and the other.
Especially if it's a real company with a real address that can really, suffer problems, you can file a complaint with either the Federal Trade Commission or your state's attorney general. And reputable companies will actually be afraid of these entities.
Yeah, and now that you mentioned the name of the company over the air, I'm sure that they will be paying attention to this. We'll see. All right, that's it for us. Write to us, oth@2600.com. Yeah, so listen to some 8-bit music on the way out. Talk to you later. Good night. I am you, bird of the computer. I love you very, very much. I love you very, very much. I am you, bird of the computer. I am you, bird of the computer. I am looking for you about. I am looking for you about. We'll be right back.
you a word on your computer.
Whoa. Hey, you know what? I love that song. That was great. I got to get a copy of that thing. Man, wasn't that something? Oh, boy, you know. You're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. It is now 8 p.m. here. And remember, WBAI, you can get the audio from WBAI.org. Okay, and it is now 8 o'clock exactly, and it is the March the 24th, 2010, and this is the Personal Computer Shoe.
And this is Joe King. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. Michael Horowitz, our webmaster, is with me in the studio.
Good evening.
Plugging earbuds into his ears. Michael, if you water those, what will grow from the buds?
Well, with all the wax in my ears, quite a lot.
Waxing. Stevie DB behind the console. And from a car someplace on Route Interstate 95, the dulcet and dancing
mobile
melody.
Skybox.
Not the skybox, the car box.
No, the skybox.
Breaking up, Al.
At any rate, glad to have you aboard, Alfred. And yep. From downtown California comes David Perry. Is David with us yet?
Yeah, Joe, I'm right here. You know, I'm in Huntington Beach, California, so surf's up, dude.
That sounds like it's fun.
Huntington Beach?
Yeah.
It's all fun.
It's all fun. We're going to be talking tonight because David, as you know, is with Trend Microcomputer, and Michael, as you know, is our webmaster, therefore very concerned about the Internet. And Alfred is driving. Alfred, are you driving, or is...
Alfred.
Alfred is gone. Alfred is not
gone. Is he browsing the web while he's driving, though?
I think that's really sexy, browsing the web while you're driving. I mean, that's really a wild thing. But Alfred, is Beeb driving, or are you?
Alfred's there. Alfred.
Yeah, I just stepped out a second to check the weather.
Yeah.
Well, you're driving and walking and talking all at the same time.
I heard tonight we're having a period of scattered darkness.
Yeah, intermittent darkness. Listen,
you know, Alfred, I don't know if you listened to the show before us, but one of the guys always calls in from Philadelphia. He has a much better cell phone than you do, let me tell you.
I won't tell you the brand.
Yeah, don't.
He's got better. He's got.
Although this is non-commercial radio, we can knock brands.
I know, but we got friends in the behind the board, so.
There are several things been happening in the world of computers this week, and since we're all chatting on the phone, let's talk about them. Any of you fellows running Bitdefender? Do any of you know?
Why, no, of course I wouldn't run that.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you
run that?
That
was a trick question with David on
that. That's a competitor, Joe.
Well, we don't allow, when you're on as an expert, which...
You know, I run three or four different security suites, but I don't run that one currently. Is there any reason I should have?
Yeah, if you have a 64-bit Windows system and you downloaded the latest update to Bitdefender, your system stopped working.
Well, that would be a good reason to use some other brand.
It might
begin with a T.
Of course, this isn't the first time that a particular security product has flagged files by mistake and crippled machines.
This is called a false positive, and it's happened to everyone in the business at one time or another.
These consisted of some EXE files, some DLL files, and a few other binary files, and Bitdefender detected them as a false positive, moved them to quarantine, and, of course, the machine stopped working at that point. It only took a few hours. They caught it, and they changed it. By then, thousands of their users were screaming bloody murder.
They're too good at pushing out their updates, huh? Yeah, well, that's the lesson to be learned there is that you absolutely should be taking image backups.
Well,
because
that's an interesting
thing. No better way to recover from a problem like that than an image backup.
I had such a problem, and Hank lent me his Universal Boot CD with Windows that he had put his own copy of Windows on, And on it, he had also, or the people who created the Boot CD, had put some software on, one of which was an image backup program.
Yes, Drive Image XML. Reasonably good program for Windows XP. I don't think it's really up to speed for Vista or Windows 7, but I've used it an awful lot for XP.
But they claim that once you make the image with that, you're actually able to just download certain files. You don't have to download the whole image. You're able to access certain files. And I asked Hank if he was absolutely positive that was the case, and he told me he was absolutely positive. I'll let you know tomorrow, because one of my clients tried it, and I would not have done it that way.
Actually, this is indicative of something else that's going on here. There is something to pay attention to here. We've just topped, about a month ago, 100,000 new unique samples a day. And this makes the update business just insane, because there's so many things that need updating every single day. And nobody keeps up with that with pattern files. So everyone's moving off into one sort of heuristics or another. We've gone off into reputation services, where rather than test the individual code, we're testing its internet connection.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because wasn't there a big story in the news a few days ago about the most famous piece of malware from the last year, the piece that bit Google in January, I believe, of this year, called Aurora.
Sure, but and Aurora some company, is not the name of the malware.
Some company made a... All right, not to nitpick the names.
Yeah.
I know every company gives it its own name.
No, but go ahead.
But
go ahead.
Some company had made a tweak to this particular piece of malware and ran it by a whole bunch of antivirus programs, and 6 of the 7 failed to detect the tweaked version, although the program was still malicious.
Can you give me a minute on this? I really want to talk about this.
All right, we'll give you a minute.
Okay, to start off with, Aurora is the name of the vulnerability and I know the test that you're talking about, but if you're okay, so imagine we are testing not the code, but its original internet source. So you make up a new piece of malware, you modify the existing piece of malware, and you hand plant it on a machine. You are creating a condition that exists as a threat to no user in the entire world. Not a real threat, okay? The real threat, almost all the malware you get, nearly 100%, 99.39%, is coming from the web nowadays. Even the stuff that comes from email is really coming from the web, because you don't see the executable buried in the email anymore. You just see a URL that takes you to an infecting site.
Or an infected Excel spreadsheet, or an infected PDF file, et cetera.
Almost all through a URL. Almost entirely through a URL. They do not bury the code in the email anymore. Not to the best of my knowledge, and that's what I do for a living, okay? So if I make a fake piece of email, a fake piece of malware, a new piece of malware, and hand plant it on a machine to test, we're not going there. We're not detecting the malware. We are detecting its connectivity. We're detecting how it comes to you from the web using both a blacklist of known bad websites and known bad IP addresses and known bad hash codes of files, but also the correlation between those three and heuristics on them. For example, if a website is not open for less than 1 hour, we will not let you go there. Does that make sense?
A website is not open
for
an hour?
A website is open for less than 1 hour. We will not let you go there.
You mean if it's a brand new website, there's no history on it?
No history. We won't let you go there. If a website is forwarding on email from a CNC or has connectivity to a CNC and a botnet, we will not let you go there. And so
on and so
on.
Just to translate, CNC is command and control center, I assume?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be a botnet item. We have 52 of such heuristics and can go beyond 97% detection, including the fake piece of malware that they used, if it would have been loading to you from a URL. But the fact that he hand plants it on the machine means that you are detecting individual pieces of malware, and that's not how the game is played anymore, period.
So suppose somebody using social engineering, I'm brought to mind the guy who planted 87 USB drives out in a parking lot, making the assumption that some people at least were going to plug them in.
Yes. That's a great story.
Wouldn't catch
I love
those.
That story.
Well, we actually block auto execution of USB auto run. So that's, and we also automatically scan anything you plug into the USB port. Anything that's going to launch, we